perfect love. Seems so different from the others, staring me down. Jackknife, flip side, body color, white lies. Weaving the web for you and different.
G'day, I'm Erka. Welcome to episode 5 of Erka FM Extra, where we go behind the scenes, behind the stage, backstage with many, many people from the music industry, whether they be singers, songwriters, producers, industry people, or anybody really involved in music. You can find the interviews at www.erkfmextra.com. From Melbourne, we have a very special guest, the vocalist from Heaven the Axe, as recently featured on ErkFM Metal Monday. Hello, Phoebe.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing awesome. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Pretty good. Having a lovely day here writing a couple of tunes.
Well, that's actually quite interesting because, as you know, and as the listeners now know, I featured your band, Heaven the Axe, recently on ErkFM Metal Monday. And you said, oh, I think I'd like an interview. I think that would be really awesome. And that was the week where I lost my audio host.
Oh, really?
And so I was busy transferring things, and the next week after that was a bit hectic. And so you've emailed me to remind me, and I said, that's cool. You know, Phoebe sounds like a cool chick and a band rock, so I'm more than happy to do it.
Thanks.
So we made the time to meet up, and you're a bit distracted.
I know. I normally don't ever forget, and I've got the best thing where I put reminders in my iPhone so that I don't ever forget. And my phone was turned off out of the room, and here I am getting all caught up in this sad song that I'm writing, completely lost track of time. So I'm sorry about that, but here we are. And, yeah, it's amazing how, you know, you always try and create time to write music, and it really does take a whole lot of shutting off the world and shutting off, you know, what you normally would do, and getting involved in the story behind the song. And that's exactly where I was. You know, I was very much caught up in a sad situation that we know about through some friends of ours, where the wife is really, really suffering from some terrible disease and deteriorating fast. And I just really got caught up in, you know, that no matter how hard you tried to help someone in that situation, you know, losing your lover, you know, and how hard that situation would be. And normally when I write songs, I would try and write some sort of situation of hope or promise for the future. But I think for me, if I was to lose my lover, I would be heartbroken and not interested in hearing anything positive.
Yeah.
So that's where I was at.
It's quite interesting you say that, because I often interview artists from around the world, and say we've got things to worry about, such as time zone conversions, and Skype can be an evil mistress at times. Mm. And then I was a bit worried that I hadn't heard from you, and then when I did contact you, it actually made me feel quite good, because you said, I'm writing a song, and, you know, that's what we're about here on ERK FM. We're about the music, and, you know, I can handle being placed second to writing a song. I can handle that.
Yeah, well, you know, it really comes down to living in the moment of every day, you know, trying to work on the music and the management of it all, because, you know, we are an independent band, and there is bills to be paid, but, you know, there's so much work to be done when it comes to really making a dent with your music, and we're really committed to that. The guys in the band have actually been out there trying to look for some kind of work, you know, to pay for our upcoming tours, because we have tours coming up into different states, and of course that costs money to begin with. You know, hopefully you make some of it back and it ends up paying for itself, but the rest of the time I'm really here plugging out emails and getting in touch with people such as yourself, trying to get the word out there about us and just working really hard. And yeah, it's nice to be able to take a break and write some music today.
It is. So we might as well just stick with the singing songwriting questions for the moment. How do you write your songs? Does it come words first, tunes first?
Well, not in all the case of our whole CD, but mostly for me, my songs will come from a melody and the tune and more syllables in my mind. So I won't actually hear the words. I'll hear the sound of the words. So I kind of like to fantasize that song's already written, like, you know, the BFG in the Roald Dahl book, where dreams float around and then pop into his head and he bottles them. You know, that's how I like to see my songs. that they come from somewhere with a certain sound, and then if I take the time to sit down and write them out, then I've caught them, you know, and that's how I like to go about it. And I tend to work on the acoustic guitar, so I try and nut them out very basically on there. So, and then I try and get the boys to learn it and get excited about it and write the guitar parts a lot more seriously than I would. But in you know, some of the tunes on the CD have been written in a jam situation. So Enemy, the first song on our record, was really written in the band room with the musicians going full tilt with some riffs and me singing along, and that's what came out of it, and it's a very strong track. But as a general rule, it's written, melody first, acoustic translated to band.
So what happens if it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you're asleep and you get a really good idea for a song?
Well, I guess more often than not, I would roll over and go back to sleep and think, oh, that was good, maybe I should write it down. But it's definitely a practice. A lot of songs come and a lot of songs go. But if I'm driving around, or if I'm at the supermarket, even the other day, I was loading my groceries up on the conveyor belt and I had an idea, and I just get out my iPhone and sing it into that. I don't care if anyone hears me or if they think I'm weird. I couldn't care less what they think. You know, at least I'm capturing the song.
Things like iPhones are so convenient. I ask that question of all the bands, and yeah, some people have very different responses. Some have the response of, well, if I roll over and I go back to sleep and I think about it in the morning, well, it must be a really good idea.
Yeah.
Some people will reach to the side of their bed and they'll pick up their iPhone, or, you know, some people will go old school and use pen and paper and they'll write it down. But we've also had people who will go into another room where their instrument is and start playing their instrument there and then.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really about just choosing to keep it, you know, making it happen.
So what inspires you when it comes to songwriting?
Well, anything really. It's really about where I'm at the time and what's going on around me. As I said, like, a lot of the songs come from syllables, so I'll try and lay down a line from the syllables that I'm getting, and then, you know, that line will pretty much set the tone of the song. I won't know what it's about, but generally it really pops out, you know, whatever's going on at the moment. It could be, you know, something that's upbeat and fun, or it could be something that's really quite grief-filled, like the one I'm writing today.
So the one you're writing today, did you plan to do that, or was that just something that came out as a good idea, must do it now?
Well, yeah, it just came out. Like, I have the radio on when I'm having a shower. So I've been to the gym this morning and ridden my bike home and jumped in the shower and had the radio on in the background while I'm blow-drying my hair. And sometimes I'll hear a smidgen of a melody, or think I've heard a certain melody, which is not actually the melody at all. And then it'll play in your mind. So it's sort of like a combination of sounds that start to play in your mind. So this song came to me when I was in the bathroom blow-drying my hair this morning, and now here I am.
Wow.
And I'm up to the bridge. It's always that way. First chorus, and now the fucking bridge.
So you always go in order?
Oh, not always. So I guess the kind of style that I write is like that, but then you develop it. But if I can take enough of an idea to the boys, then it'll have a good enough chance of being rehearsed properly.
Do you ever get to the stage where you, like, you hear a melody, it might be dun 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 dun, and then you think, oh yeah, that's really good, and then later on you put it to the boys and they say, oh no, that's, you know,
yeah,
artist X or...
Yeah, definitely. I've got this song that I wrote called In the Middle. It's about Mercury retrograde, and Matt was like, I'm never playing that, it sounds like Violent Femmes. And then we played it to him again the other day and he loved it. And I said, you said you'd never play it, sound like Violent Femmes. And he said, I did not, you know, couldn't even imagine that he'd said that. So it just depends on what day you hit them up.
Because ultimately there's, you know, there's only so many, people say there's only so many chords that you can use, so many combinations. So to continually think of something new that doesn't sound like another band can be difficult.
Exactly, and I think that's what makes our band a bit different. You know, the style of the musicians combined with my melodies and singing is an original combination. You know, they take, you know, it wouldn't matter how soft and delicate a song is that I wrote when they take it and I finish with it, it's completely on another tangent with a lot of detail and layers and things like that. It takes a lot of work.
So we should talk about the guys in the band. Introduce the band, even though, of course, they're not here.
Well, my husband's just walked into the room. He's the guitarist.
That's convenient.
That's Steve Watts, and he was the front man for a metal band called Manticore back in the 90s that used to headline at Metal for the Brain and tour around quite a bit. Matt Silcox, the other guitarist, and he was the guitarist for Damage that wrote Do Not Spit and a lot of their music in the early days, who was one of the most influential metal bands of the 90s. Also, there is Tom Russell, he's on the drums on the live recording, and he's in a band called House of Thumbs. They're unbelievable. Check them out. And there's Aramis, who is our other drummer. So we have two drummers, one who performs with us always live now, but Tommy also performs with us live too, depending on what it is. So sometimes we perform with both of them, alternating for different songs. We just enjoy each other's company and decided we'd have two drummers. And then we've got Trav on bass, and Trav Price is a guy that hasn't played bass for 20 years. He loves it. He's so committed, and he came to us right at the right time. And he's never, ever put a note wrong, and he's always there. He lives in Ballarat, drives an hour and a half to rehearse and then an hour and a half home to go back to work. And that's our happy little family.
So how did you all meet up in the first place, and when did the band form?
Well, I really was enamoured by the Manticore, Steve's band, back in the 90s when I was trying to sneak into pubs. I was pretty much obsessed with him. He was the hottest guy, most toughest, powerful man I ever saw. And I just sort of basically chased him around for a while, always thinking he was way too far out of my league. And we finally hooked up to play some music in Wagga, and we started an acoustic duo, and we had some great sort of local success with that. We were making more money than cover bands, even with our original acoustic duo, and people were really coming and taking it on. And of course, we wanted to get out of Wagga and make the band happen, because there wasn't the right musicians in town for us to develop our sound. So we moved down to Melbourne, and we hooked up with Matt Skitz, who was the drummer from Damaged, and Steve was in Terrorist with him for a little while, and we recorded a couple of songs there, and from there just developed and met the right musicians through mutual friends. And now we've got basically what you'd call is a band family. You know, we really do work and spend a lot of time together and operate very closely.
So as a band, how long have you all been together?
Well, the actual Heaven the Axe band had a first gig in October 2009, but that was with a couple of different people. And Matt and Tommy joined sort of middle of last year, and then we basically went straight into the studio with them, recorded our record and got it out there. Middle of the year before. Yeah, and then we developed and got the record out and completed and mastered mid last year, and then we released it in September here in Melbourne, and then some more shows.
So you're a country girl originally?
Yeah. From Wagga.
From Wagga. So it would have been a big step for you to move from the relatively safety of Wagga and then going to Melbourne.
Yeah. Well, I'd lived in the city before. I'd lived in Sydney, which was pretty much a soul-destroying affair. I moved there to do a talent program back when I was in high school still, but ended up chasing down the path of working as a stripper in King's Cross and living the nightlife and discovering that side of myself, which I will never regret. And, you know, really got involved in, you know, the flip side of life. You know, I've worked in the corporate world more recently as a job, but I'm aware, and not a lot of people that do work in the top of the big skyscrapers in Sydney know that there's a whole other flip side to life which exists all night, and that there's always people out there living that life. So it's been eye-opening, but I would say through that journey and through what I got to experience with my grounding and developing what I have with Steve, you know, as people, we've really had to develop in order to create this situation where we've got a group, a creative team of people that work together. And I guess that was really hard moving to Melbourne too, first, because we really had to find genuine friends and beautiful, committed people that wanted to be part of the integrity that we created instead of part of the scene and what it is to be in the scene.
When you were a little girl, did you want to be a musician?
Definitely, yeah. I remember seeing some kids singing at a concert when I was 5, and they were dancing to "Catch a Falling Star" and put it in your pocket. You know that song?
Yeah.
And there was all these beautiful lights, and they were wearing coloured costumes, and I never forget seeing that on stage and thinking to myself, "That is what I want to do with my life."
So you've been in the industry for a while now. If you could think back and compare what you know now, would you give yourself, like, previous Phoebe, young Phoebe, would you give her some advice?
I can't really say. I don't think that without everything that I've learnt that I would be here and be this person that I am today.
What about some advice for some young people in the industry that might be listening, that might be just starting up? Have you got any advice for them?
I think what's really important is that you put other people first rather than any goals. The people and their life and communication and being there for them is the most important thing to developing a strong musical relationship.
That's pretty cool. I usually ask that question because we do have people outside the industry who might be looking to come in, and with the people that I interview, I've usually got different experiences, so it's always cool to ask the question, and I never had anyone say, no, I don't want to share my experience.
Yeah, I think that's definitely our trick for sure. We're really definitely there for the people in our band in every way that we can be, and that makes it really strong.
What is the Melbourne music scene like, in your opinion, and would you be able to compare that to the Sydney scene? Have you got any recent knowledge of the Sydney scene?
I really don't know. Like, we've played in Sydney a few times and it's always been really good. We've had great success playing up there. I think the Melbourne scene's very rich. There's a lot of fantastic bands, and so far it's, yeah, pretty friendly. People are really keen to work together and put on good shows and lineups, and, yeah, we've found it to be great.
What about the venues? Have you got a favourite venue that you always like to play at?
Oh, well, we did our record launch at House of Rock, and that was fantastic. That's the Palace Theatre in Melbourne. It's huge. It was great. It's such a great venue with a great vibe, fantastic promoters. They really look after you. We really enjoyed playing there.
Have you or the guys got any sort of superstitions or things that you have to do before you go on stage?
Well, before we go on stage, I'm not entirely sure about before we go on stage, but I do have a hobby or an obsession with astrology, and I'm a lot like that chick in the movie Spinal Tap. You know how, have you seen Spinal Tap?
Yep.
And the girl that takes over the band management, she's an astrologer, and she sits them down with their charts and everything and says, look, we can't play here because of these certain aspects. And I do that. Like, I go to bed studying astrology most nights, and I definitely take into account what's going on with the planets before we book a plane flight or, you know, sign a contract, things like that. I've definitely got it in the back of my mind what sort of tools the planets are giving me in order to manage the band.
Do you take into account the venue or the crowd when it comes to things like setting your set list?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, we've got some ballads that are really beautiful, you know, and they are in demand, I guess. But when we're playing a headline show at late at night when the crowd's really drunk and they just want to rock out, you know, we'll probably drop that and stay with the biggest songs that keep the crowd really entertained and rocking. And if we're playing a longer set, we might throw in a couple of acoustic songs too, so we're playing at an event or something like that, because we've got lots of acoustic songs that have some pretty funny stories about them, particularly to the development of the band.
Do you find that people who aren't necessarily familiar with the band are a bit surprised when you go acoustic?
I think they probably just enjoy it for what it is, because we're quite friendly. You know, we like to have a chat on stage and explain what songs are about, because they are pretty funny, pretty daggy sort of stories, which always get a laugh. So, yeah, I look forward to putting those out there.
What's the funniest thing that you've seen or had happen to you while you've been on the stage, while you've been performing?
Once in Sydney, I was having the best gig. It was at the Bald-Faced Stag. And, oh, we were just on fire. You know, the crowd was huge and it was just a perfect set. And I went to put my foot on, you know, those wedge speakers?
Yep.
I went to put my foot on there and I totally, like, the speaker went straight out from under me and I ended up having to go right back and I did a whole backflip on the floor on stage. That was pretty funny.
Now, did you pull it off?
Yeah, I just sort of went along with it and exaggerated it and then made a bit of a joke and smiled to the audience. So it was all cool. As long as you acknowledge it, it's instead of pretending like nothing happened, you won't look like a dickhead.
Yeah, because obviously with the amount of electronic things that you have in a band and, you know, all these musicians on a stage, something is going to happen from time to time, so you have to be able to cope with that.
Yeah, and I wear chaps on stage sometimes too. I love them. They make me feel great. I love wearing them. And I got some photos back from a tour we did in Queensland. I swear to God, they were so high res, you could see some pubes out the side of my pants in the chaps. That was a lovely moment too. It was a bit special for the crowd.
Speaking of things like that, have you had... As a woman in the music industry, I've never actually asked this question of a woman that I've spoken to before. Yeah. Has it been a help or a hindrance being a woman in the industry, in your opinion?
Well, until now, I would say it's a help. You know, there's a lot of sort of website forums and you know, support, I guess, for women in the industry. And plus, it's not just another band coming through on an email with all blokes in the lineup, you know. So it might sort of give us a bit more of a chance to be noticed in that regard. But we did have lunch with a major label the other day and they, you know, really acknowledged our music and the strength of it. And they said in the marketplace there probably hasn't been another Baby Animals or Divinyls because there isn't a demand for female-fronted hard rock. So that just made me question, you know, what the hell? I like it. A lot of other people like it. Why would there not be a particular demand for female-fronted hard rock? So that's where I'm at right now with it, just sort of questioning why would this A&R person say that.
Well, I can think of three bands in Sydney straight off the top of my head that I follow and help promote.
Yeah.
When it comes to female-fronted rock, Domino, Hard as Nails and Smoke and Mirrors. So there's definitely some, you know, good female-fronted rock out there.
Yeah, there's good female-fronted rock out there, but... where's the push from the industry to recognise it? Where's the demand? You know, the people that have broken female-fronted hard rock bands tell me that it's really, really difficult to do so. It's not an easy task.
In this day and age, considering that basically you're independent, I'm independent, we're having this conversation now, do you need the industry?
I'm not sure. We need money, you know. We really do. We're making our film clip at the moment and it's on a $0 budget because, you know, my commitment to this project, it takes up a lot of the hours of my day and I'd rather sort of reprioritize my life around working on what I want to do rather than having money for shit that I don't need. So we've managed to pull together a creative team of people who see the opportunity in being involved in our film clip and lending their creative skills at $0. So it's really become the art of conversation in creating that and I really can't wait to put that out there. It's quite an ambitious clip and it's our first one, but we're not going to put out anything that's less than awesome.
Yeah. Back to the Women in Rock thing for a moment. We should talk about how we actually found each other because that's part of the appeal of things like the internet and, you know, the whole women in music genre.
Yeah.
Now, I actually found you guys via a Facebook page called Chicks in Bands.
Oh, yeah?
Which is absolutely awesome. I've managed to have a couple of specials just dedicated to women that I found via that group.
It's cool, isn't it? There's some great, great music on there to discover.
And that's a lot of people sort of down on things like Facebook where it comes to music. But these days it's just so easy. Like I can call you up or you can call me up and just say, you know, can you do this, can you do that or whatever. And it's so easy. You don't have to go through, people's people or or anything like that.
Yeah, it's really great. We love it. We love getting messages on our Facebook page and chatting to people. It makes our day.
What bands are appealing to you at the moment?
I really like Red Fang. I really like, that's probably the only band that I'm really loving at the moment. But I'm listening to a lot of classical music just because I need to switch off from listening to bands and the radio and things like that. I get quite angry listening to the radio because there's not much music on there that I like. I don't know if that's just me showing my age, but I just get angry at some of the major radios that play so much shit old music and music that really doesn't appeal to me. I'm sure it appeals to somebody else. So, yeah, it classical music's better for me at the moment because I can switch off and not have to worry about the marketing behind the band that I'm listening to.
So is it hard to switch off?
Yeah, definitely, because there's always a possibility. There's always something that you could be doing.
And that's the thing. As we've said in this interview and as I've said in other interviews, so many of the bands that I feature have to have day jobs because the money's not there.
Yeah, that's it. It's really hard work, but there's always a possibility of creating money somehow, and that's what stresses me out.
So let's talk about a way of creating money.
Mm-hmm.
Your album.
Yeah.
Tell us about the album.
Well, it's 8 songs, 7 of which are the full band. 2 songs Matt Skitz plays on, and then 5 of them are with Tommy on drums. And there's a bonus track, which is a song that I recorded in my bedroom, just on GarageBand with my acoustic guitar and the cello. And, I recorded that, wrote it about, marketing your band and how much you've got your perfect dream, which is finally having your music come together, but how much it hurts to push it out there yourself, and just what I struggled with that.
How long did it actually take to produce the album?
A couple of years, but once it was all there and together, it was a lot easier, and we have a lot more experience in putting it together now because we understand the layering process and how to put it all together. The artwork took a long time as well. And then, you really hold off on it for a while and try and get reviews and promotion for it as well.
Do you notice a difference between when you started working on the album and when you finished it?
musically what we recorded?
Yeah.
Oh, there'll always be things that you hear and that you didn't hear for 6 months of listening to it on repeat, that you hear later on, you'll go, oh, I wish I'd, maybe done that. But I don't really prescribe to regret and things like that. I just choose that it is what it is, and I like it very much.
How did you feel the very first time that you held the completed package in your hand?
Oh, amazing. It was fantastic. It was a really great day. The day before that, Triple M actually contacted us and said they wanted to play the CD. Can we drop a CD in? And I had to say, well, I'm going to pick up the very first copies tomorrow and you'll have the first copy. So that was a real exciting moment. But it looks fantastic. I love it. I put a lot of work into each page of the physical CD. Each song has its own artwork. And I'm really proud of it.
So for you, what's it like being in the studio? You would have been in the studio for some time, of course, recording the album.
Yeah, I love it. Our producer, Ren Parisi of Melbourne Records, he's a totally legend guy and we get along great, so it's just always fantastic to hang around with him. He's got such great ideas that he brings to the table and, yeah, we really enjoy his company.
What would you say would be some of the differences for you between being in the studio and performing live?
I like being in the studio, but it can be pretty boring. You know, you're sitting around a lot and, you know, mostly it's all ready to go. You know exactly what you're going to put in. But I love it so much. But performing live, it's fantastic. It's so exciting, you know, meeting people that have come to hear you perform because they like your music and have found you from somewhere. It's really rewarding.
So, of course, we should mention the name of the album and how people can actually get it.
Yeah, it's called Sex, Chugs and Rock and Roll, and the band is Heaven the Axe, and you can get it from our website, which is heaventheaxe.com. It comes signed, and or you can download it from iTunes.
So how did you come up with the name of the band and the name of the album?
Well, we were sitting out the front of the mastering studio in Sydney, 301, and we had to come up with a name, and that one just hit us, and it was perfect. It's exactly what it is. You got a wailing blonde front woman, you've got metal chugs from the guitar, and it is rock and roll, so it's a combination of all three things.
And it does really stand out, and the album, I guess, would be similar. It's the title stands out.
Cool. Yeah, we like it.
Have you got a favourite track from the album? I know they're all like your little children. It's hard to pick one.
I always like Enemy. I always like that one. That's the first one on there. It's such a tough song. I really enjoy that one.
Running faster, I know that I'm
Is there any song other than Enemy that the crowd really react to?
So Nirvana is always a groovy song, but probably the most meaningful song on there is a song called Unconditional Love. And that's a song that I actually wrote quite a while ago when I was in a rehabilitation center for being a heroin addict. And it was because I'd put my mum through hell. And just before I finally went to rehab, I said to her, you know, Mum, why are you still there for me? And she said, Phoebe, it's unconditional love. And I went away to rehab and I had some time to really think about that. And I was picking up my guitar every day and focusing on my songwriting. And it was her 50th birthday coming up and she had to drive 3 hours to visit me because that was my only visitation day, was that actual day on her birthday. So I wrote her this song just to prove to her that I really got, you know, what her stand had been for me, and gave it to her on my bed for her 50th. And she was very, very touched. And it was a really meaningful moment for me because she actually got a brain tumour only a couple of weeks after that. Oh, sorry, a couple of months after that, and died suddenly. So I was really pleased to be able to give her that song and show her what I'd learnt from her. It's very important.
Yeah.
To me.
Softly spoken, those words of love, I close my eyes. It cuts through time. Heart is open to heaven above, warm in your arms. Close to my heart, if a teardrop should fall. Forever. our love will bind us together. I'll be there for you. There's nothing you need to do. It's unconditional love that seeks lifetime through. I wanna share it with you. It's unconditional. I'll be there for you. There's nothing you need to do. It's unconditional love that seeks lifetime through. I wanna share.
Was there any pressure as a child to be a musician? I know I asked that because I know some people in musical families have some sort of inbuilt pressure. Was your family a musical family growing up?
No, not really. We were just a regular sort of family from Wagga. my father was schizophrenic and he was always thinking outside the square, and he had some amazing theories which really probably lend to me being such a free thinker now, because I grew up with my father being so free with his thinking. And my mother was she was a bit of a wild child, but she was a beautiful mum. But there was a lot of problems due to my father's mental illness, you know, with his repeated attempts with suicide as I was growing up, that really caused quite a stressful home life. And music was a way that I could escape. Singing was something that made me special. You know, as a child, when there was a lot of turmoil going on, it was something that gave me a lot of hope for my future, that I would one day leave that place and become somebody, you know, somebody with something very important to say. And I think what I've really learned about that lately is that as a child, sort of being helpless with my father's illness and the stress and the turmoil between the families and dealing with his problems, was that I felt powerless. And through growing up, I really think that the music and the sound that I've developed, you know, with the really tough, strong men around me and the very strong, loud sound, is my artistic expression of me being powerful. So I've come to really understand that that's me acting out my power.
So while it was obviously a bad situation at the time, some good has come from it.
Yeah, definitely. I think that human beings bond through pain. You know, a child is born with the most ultimate pain, and without the pain you can't, you know, really build that bond. So I have a very strong bond with my brother and sister and my husband and, yeah, my family. They are my family and you really do experience the light and dark. And, yeah, so now I'm much more able to experience the light, being in such a strong place now.
What vocal training have you had?
Well, I didn't really have a few lessons when I was a child, but lately I've delved into some study with some different kinds of trainers that really sort of helped me develop. But I know what works for me. I've done the exercises that I know work. John Swan, Swanee, he's been giving me some great coaching just over the phone, just some simple tricks that really work. But really the best thing that I do is sing along to people like Mariah Carey in the car, because that really helps to get your voice in the right spot. And I don't really have any problems with my voice when it comes to singing, unless I get too drunk before I go on stage.
That could be a problem, especially if you're headlining. You've got a bit of time before you actually go on stage.
I know. Well, our next gig coming up on the 31st of March, we're playing like 1 in the morning, I think, at the SP. So I might have to hang at home for a while before I go in, just to calm down, or I get too excited.
Do you find that a problem, that you could get like overstimulated?
Not necessarily overstimulated. Like the build up of energy is always something that's to be used to your advantage. You don't want to be feeling a bit flat before you go on stage. But even so, when I have been feeling flat, you walk on stage and something else takes over.
So how do you feel? How do you usually feel at the end of a gig? At the end of your set?
Pretty tight, like pretty exhausted, because I really put my body into it. You know, I don't just do a bit of head banging. I use my whole body to head bang, and for days afterwards, my sides are really sore just because of the stretches that I've done moving my body around on stage.
And so recently, you've been touring, and you're about to tour again. Is that right?
Yeah, at the moment we're focusing the next few weekends filming our video clip, and then we've got some big tours coming up pretty much throughout the year.
So where are you heading?
Well, I don't really want to say until it's all signed off on, but as soon as it is, I'll be putting it out there.
So we're talking interstate?
Yeah, definitely in Australia.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the best way, obviously, is to keep an eye on the website or keep an eye on you guys on Facebook, and then that way, if Heaven the Axe are in your area, I know I'll be doing that. Let me know when you're up my way and have to come out and see you guys live.
Yeah, that'd be great. Please do. Our next Melbourne gig's at the SP, as I said, on Saturday the 31st of March. And that's with a real killer lineup. But the best way to stay in touch, definitely join the Facebook page, and we have an email list that you can subscribe to via our website.
So is there anything else coming up in the year apart from a video and apart from a tour?
We're back in the studio again in March, so we're going to be recording more songs. And we just really want to work on getting the music to be heard and seen, and just playing with as many bands as we can, and hopefully make some connections overseas.
And are you thinking long term?
No, I'm just thinking of one thing at a time at the moment.
And obviously there's a lot of things to juggle at the moment. Like you've got this tour coming up, you've got the video you're recording, you're doing all the PR and everything. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah, for sure. And just getting the right balance between work and rest.
Absolutely right. So, Phoebe, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on IRC FM. Don't forget to keep in contact and hopefully see you soonish in Sydney.
Thank you so much, IRC. I really appreciate you taking the time. Cheers to everyone for listening.
And until next time, I'm IRC. Don't forget you can hear people such as Phoebe on IRC FM Metal Monday. And also, because she's Australian, you'll be able to also hear her on IRC FM Australia, which is every Friday. Until next time, on behalf of Phoebe and myself, it's good night, Interweb. Save my heart, but I really don't know to. Bring on my kisses, gonna live.